accession number 21649, room 2.
It's Frank Hayes, Realto.
Yes. When we marched round the square, the beat changed whenever we emerged from the shelter of the drill sheds. So we were constantly having to change step. It was quite a relief when we cleared them. Still headed by the band, but unfortunately the band departed from us, or left us alone, when we got to the gates, and we had to march thereafter without the accompaniment of the music. I can't recall exactly where we used to march. I remember we used to go as far as Fareham railway station in one direction. I think we used to walk down towards Leon Solent in the other direction. We didn't enjoy that bit of marching at all. We preferred it with the music, even though it was occasionally offbeat.
How did you cope with naval discipline?
Oh, no difficulty. No difficulty at all. Except that I got told off for doing silly things, like walking across a white line drawn on the tarmac in front of the admin buildings. Nobody had told me it was supposed to be the quarter deck, and that on the quarter deck one travelled at the double and not simply walking. I was bawled out once or twice for that and threatened with dire punishment if I did it again.
What's happened at the end of Collingwood?
The end of Collingwood, if I remember correctly, yes, we were sent to RNB in Portsmouth first.
Were you in any bombing whilst you were at Collingwood or Portsmouth?
I can't recall at that stage whether it was or not. Certainly when I was in RNB Portsmouth, we used to, because by that time, no, it must have been later, by that time I was a gunnery rating, I was a gun layer, and we had to man machine guns up on the roof. Yes, there was bombing while I was there. I know RNB was terribly, terribly overcrowded. For example, rooms which were supposed to hold 100 people held somewhere near 1,000. It was almost impossible to sling a hammock. Very unhygienic too, because hammocks were slung across the mess tables, and it wasn't unusual to have a smelly foot descend into the tomatoes which you'd just picked up from the galley for breakfast, or in the middle of your bacon. The washrooms, I think they had, if I remember right, yes, they had 12 basins between 1,000 and 2,000 people. And the most frequently used water was that in a lead sink on the landing, which was used for washing up the dishes, for people brushing their teeth, for people washing, for people shaving, and all manner of things. Quite a horrific experience. And I was very pleased when we were moved out of there. If I remember, this is the correct sequence of events. They opened Stockheath, or on the point of opening Stockheath Camp, which is now at Havant, or part of Havant. This was in the woods. When we arrived there, we found that we were in bell tents. The height of winter, near Christmas time, I think it was, and there was slushy snow on the ground, and there were duck boards in the tents, on which we had to put our unfolded hammocks. It wasn't very comfortable. They had got some semi-permanent buildings there by then. They had hot, very hot showers, but the sides and roof were made of corrugated sheeting, and raised duck boards enabled you to be off the ground. But there was a terrific cold draft underneath and a cold draft at the top, and scalding water in between. Not a very good experience. Food was reasonable there, but we complained bitterly about this, having to live in these tents, because we were supposed to be going to Nissen huts. However, they were not properly completed, but I remember moving into the very first one, in which the concrete wasn't fully set. We didn't have a heating stove, and we certainly had no water supply for washing. I can remember knocking a nail into a tree and hanging a metal mirror on it so that I could shave. And the water which we used for that purpose, and indeed for washing, was the contractor's water supply from a standpipe.
Where was this?
Stockheath Camp. Yes, I think that's where we moved from there. I'm a little bit vague about the actual dates of moving, you know, of being in different camps. I spent quite a long spell at Stamshaw, where there were sailors from other navies, principally the Australian Navy, who were over here to pick up, I think, 3 destroyers. There was a large contingent of people from the Indian Navy. That was quite interesting, because there were frequent cases of, I suppose, the different races being at loggerheads with each other, or probably quarrelling over some woman who worked in the galley, chasing each other around with knives. The Australians were very interesting. One incident occurred. Well, I can remember receiving a phone call in the middle of the night, early part of the night, right? They used to like to go to the Blue Anchor in North End. That was their pub.
Where's North End?
In Portsmouth. And a little bit further up, I think it was opposite Aggie Weston's, which was the Sailor's Rest home place, there was a cinema with steps, quite a few steps down outside. And the phone call I received was from the Portsmouth police to tell us to do something about it, because there was an Australian there making life difficult for the people coming out of the cinema. Apparently he'd had rather too much to drink, but before he'd left the camp, he had stolen the officer of the watch's revolver from his cabin and taken it with him, with ammunition. And when the police were called to the proximity of the cinema, they were told that this Aussie was shouting, "Dance, you bastard, dance," and he was firing the revolver into the pavement. Not at people, but in proximity to them. Quite lively. Oh yes, we had survivors from Barham, the battleship.
What do you remember of those?
In Collingwood at the time. I recall them, but they were very glad to be alive. And I'm quite keen to get back to sea again, I might add. But strange thing was that with all this large quantity of people in barracks actual posting to a ship was very slow in many cases. And I remember the great preponderance in barracks of the staff there who were three badge people, long service people, with a lot of experience of the Navy, being on shore since the beginning of the war, never having been in any ships at all. And if I remember rightly, there was a bit of a row about that, and I think they changed the Commodore. I can't be too sure of this. Yes, they did change the Commodore, that's right. And the incoming chap, he spotted what we were aware of, that there were a lot of these three badgemen around, who seemed to be having quite a comfortable life, being responsible for issue of respirators and hammocks and things, the new people coming in, being responsible for drafting and that sort of thing. And one day there seemed to be a lot less of these people around, and they'd all been sent up to Scapa Flow, where it wasn't quite so pleasant. I think this was to move things on a little bit. But we used to get terribly bored in there, because you used to get the most ridiculous jobs to do. For example, to keep you occupied, they would get you to take provisions to the provision store. And when you got there, you were told to take them back to the other side of the parade ground. And then when you got there, you'd be told to take them back to the provision store. And there was an unholy row one day because a whole round of cheese was missing at the end of the day's labours. And we were told that there'd be no leave for anybody until it was found. It was found about half an hour later on the wrong side of the parade ground from the provision store. That was the sort of stupidity that went on at the time. We used to have to provide people to fire watch at Kingston Jail, Kingston Prison in Portsmouth. I remember going there and being unpopular afterwards. What happened was that we had to be on duty there, be awake, in case there were incendiary bombs dropped in the neighbourhood or on the prison. And we were in a little room just off the entrance. Fortunately, there was a big gap underneath the door. A howling cold wind came through there, but there was a gas fire in the room. The only trouble was that that was terribly defective, and there was a huge smell of gas around the place. And I can recall the first night we ever went there, we all had the most vile headaches. And I complained bitterly when I got back to the Office of the Watch about this. And I was eventually referred to the medical officer, who thankfully came round and investigated, and I don't think they ever sent any more working parties there after that until the problem was cleared up. I was a bit unpopular because when we were on watch in R&B Portsmouth in the barracks, when we were off duty, we were supposed to sleep in the shelters underneath the parade ground. But they were not the best of conditions. The beds were ARP stretchers with a thin mattress on them, if I remember rightly. But they were rusted. The walls of the shelters were slimy, like a harbour wall. And not the best place to send people if you wish them to remain healthy. And I complained about that. Again, the medical officer was involved. I think that's why I was eventually sent out to Stockheath. Get it even worse.
So you were waiting for a ship quite a long time?
Yes, my first ship I was. I can't remember exactly when I went on my first ship. I know it was a Keppel in Londonderry.
Well, it says on your record the 8th of September 1942.
Yeah, well, that's more than a year, isn't it, after I joined. I mean, I was on various courses, like gunnery courses and things, in that intervening period, but in common with a lot of people, I was hanging around quite a bit.
Can you tell me about going to Keppel, please?
Going to Keppel? Well, I didn't quite know what to expect. It was my first ship.
Was this an actual ship?
Oh, yes. Oh, HMS Keppel was quite a famous ship, particularly in connection with Russian convoys and Mediterranean convoys and so forth. But not long after I joined her, she paid off in London.
Anything of significance happened to you when you were in Keppel?
Nowhere to sleep. Nowhere to sling my hammock. There were far more people on board than she was ever built for. I think probably the most significant thing when I was over there, I had to make up a party bringing a prisoner from Londonderry to Preston Jail in this country. And I think, if I remember, his offence was peeing on the captain from the crow's nest because he didn't like what he'd said about him. That was about the most exciting thing. And, oh, we did have trouble in Londonderry. I think that was when I was with Keppel. The first American Marines arrived in Londonderry. And there was a deal of animosity between them and our Navy. And after one of our ratings was actually stabbed and killed by an American at a local dance, we threatened to throw them out of Londonderry altogether and armed ourselves with chair legs and goodness knows what else for that purpose. It was serious. Perhaps fortunately, somebody in our headquarters there got in touch with the American headquarters, and the Marines were prohibited to leave camp for a month.
What was the cause of the animosity in the first place?
Can't recall. I really can't recall. I think it was largely the swagger of the Marines and the fact that now they were here, the war was going to be won. That's about it.
Did you run into them personally?
At that dance, yes. Yes. One of them was extremely rude to a wren. And that's what started a general melee in the dance hall.
Did you get involved?
Oh, yes.
What did you do?
Joining the general punching and slugging. And there was a... I can't recall his name now, quite a famous Irish boxer who was there. And I can remember him knocking two Americans out with two consecutive blows. Police of all kinds arrived, including the Americans' own police, and cleared the dance hall. It was when the dance hall was being cleared, there were blackout curtains, double blackout curtains, at the entrance or exit. And it was when one of our chaps was going through there that he was stabbed by the American and killed. And they became very, very unpopular then.
Where was the dance hall?
Pardon?
Where was the dance hall?
In Londonderry itself. Yeah. Wasn't a big dance hall either, from recollection. But it had been going rather nicely until this American walked up to the Wren, and he just says, "Dance, sister." No, I said, "I'm sorry." He said, "I'm rather tired. I don't want to dance now." I said, "Dance, sister," and he grabbed hold of her and pulled her to her feet. And it was then that somebody stepped in and told him to back off, and he didn't. And that was a general melee. It really was all go.
Was he under the influence?
Oh, yes. 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 Certainly the original character was, and I think some others as well.
Were you injured?
Me? Later in my service, when I was in Boston in America, in a bar there, we had trouble with some of the young American trainee sailors who thought that they were absolutely brilliant and that we were rubbish. And had a Scotchman with us there who was a bit bellicose when he was wound up. And they'd said something, and he overheard it and replied. And they came extremely menacingly towards us. We were greatly outnumbered, about four or five of us, and there must have been about 20 of them. And the little Scotsman now was standing up to them, and he said, "Ah, hi," he said, "and this laddie here," he says, "is the British Naval Boxing Champion." It's me. So there I stood, thumbing my nose and going like this and making boxing gestures, and the whole 20 backed off. We escaped. That's so much for my boxing prowess.
Was it all a myth?
What?
Was it all a myth?
Myth what? Myth. My boxing prowess? Yeah, well, I could box, yes, but I was no champion. I wasn't very big.
So what happened to you after Keppel?
Oh, Keppel now. Back to barracks, wasn't it? I think I went from that Stamshaw, wasn't it? Really can't recall.
It says here, Vuleni.
What?
Vuleni.
That's it. Thank you. Was that? I really can't remember.
Well, tell me about the next thing you can remember.
Basically, back in the barracks in Portsmouth. And then, yes, that was when I was put on draft to to BDEP 1, which was British Destroyer Escort Portsmouth 1, for which purpose we were to entrain at some date not quite known for Glasgow and travelled across the Atlantic on the Andes, which is a troop ship. And that was in December 1942. I recall that we didn't really know when, what date we were going. But I was very fed up with being in barracks, so pointless that I asked for temporary drafts. Being a gunnery rating, I thought I might be useful. And I had to persist and persist. And eventually somebody said, do you mind doing a spell of guard duty? I said, no, as long as it gets me out of these bloody barracks. So I was told, in company with another chap, to have my kit ready in an hour's time, and a lorry would come for us and take us. They wouldn't say where. What happened then? was we were bundled into the lorry, and it proceeded from the naval barracks in Portsmouth round to HMS Vernon in Portsmouth, a matter of yards, or half a mile at most. They still would not say where we were bound for. We were then transferred to another lorry and proceeded up north end of Portsmouth, through Cosham, through Fareham, down past HMS Collingwood, down to Leon Solent, turned left at Leon Solent, and came along to Stokes Bay, at Alverstoke, Gosport. And I hadn't got the faintest idea where that was. I soon found out that we hadn't travelled very, very far, except in a little circle, or an incomplete circle. And what was the job? It was to guard the beach. We were quartered in what had been swimming changing quarters. And our job, as far as I could make out, was to make certain that nobody came along that stretch of beach. Because our orders were quite specific, you issue one challenge, and if it's unsatisfactorily answered, you open fire. Well, in the short period of time that I was there, about a matter of 2 or 3 weeks, I think it was, I almost shot an owl. Because it made a disturbing noise, which I challenged. There was no reply, and I was just about to squeeze the trigger, and it went woo-hoo, and escaped free. That was that. It was quite interesting there, though, because when I first arrived, the chief in charge was standing on a slatted chair, looking inland through a high window in the room. Now, I made some stupid remark like, "Oh, you'll not find the enemy there, Chief." No, he said, "Bugger the enemy, come and look at this." So I did come and look at this, and what did I see? There was a house not far from me, from where we were quartered, on the other side of what is Stokes Bay Road, and there was a balcony. And what I saw was a young lady doing Grecian-type dances in nothing at all. And apparently this exhibition was conducted every morning for the benefit of the lads in there. Why it occurred, I don't know. I wasn't there long enough. I hope I'm not defaming anybody. Yes, anyhow, we eventually entrained for Glasgow, boarded the Andes, and because I was a gunnery rating, I was assigned to the 6-inch gun. Where, strangely, out of the sort of scratch crew of that gun, I found that five people came from Cumberland, which is quite amazing considering, with Cumberland being quite a small county, it provided a very high proportion of the crew of that gun. We didn't know each other, that was it. It's quite interesting, that Andes crossing. It took 5 days, we had every kind of weather, we were, as far as I know, totally unescorted. The Andes had been used for the previous trip from America to North Africa, bringing American troops to North Africa. Nobody incidentally cleaned the ship in between times. The people being transported were largely an RAF ship. They were largely RAF people going for the air training scheme over in Canada or some in America. A large contingent of them. There were about 500, I think, Fleet Air Arm people going for the same purpose. Of us, I should imagine there would be about another 500, and we were going to pick up these British destroyers.